Friesel. Wilbek scores against his old club.
Hello, and you are listening to the Puck and Talk. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. I'm your host for today, Schwinn. Tez is missing. He drank a little too much last night after a 5-0 win and is enjoying the day off. So today we have with us Tony. How are you, mate?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Pretty good, pretty good. And we have Savvy back from illness. How are you doing, Savvy?
Yeah, very good.
Are you still suffering from a bout of illness from this past weekend? Or are you ready to put in a master class?
No, I'm all right. Yeah. Masterclass like Mesutozil.
Wonderful. So before we begin and we talk about our game yesterday against Huddersfield and we talk about our upcoming game against Man United, we at the Clock and Talk just wanted to take a moment to pass our condolences for Dermot Drummey, an Arsenal stalwart, an Arsenal loyalist who recently passed away. So from everyone at the Clock and Talk, we would like to give his family and his loved ones our condolences. All right, to Huddersfield. After a good win this past weekend, a tough win against a tough Burnley side, we welcomed Huddersfield. And not everyone was expecting a result. Many people were expecting a rotation. Many people were expecting Huddersfield to put up a defensive exhibition. But before we get into that, let's go to Tony and talk about the lineup.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was... Look, Wenger's clearly decided that what his strongest team is, whether we all agree, is personal preference. I'm coming round to agreeing. 3 weeks ago, I wouldn't have said it was with Lacazette. I think the amount of improvement he's shown in a month is extraordinary. So I would agree that's our strongest team. I think the only question anyone had before the game was whether Ozil was fit and whether he was going to rest a few players. I obviously said on our podcast on Monday that I thought Koscielny might be rested just because obviously we know with his Achilles issue he tends to not be able to play twice in a week and he's going to have to play three times in a week. But he came through the game all right. So I don't think there was any shocks in the lineup. If Ozil's fit, he plays. And he went for our strongest team. A lot of people online pointed out that other teams are rotating because they've been playing three games a week every week. This is the first time this season that we've played three games in a week with them players. Obviously, we've had Europa League and Carabao Cup, but we've been playing a completely different 11. So you see it as if you've got to December and it's the first time that your players are being made to play three times a week, it's really not all that bad. But Koscielny was just the one that surprised me.
Savvy, a lot of people were talking about how they expected Jack to start. That was no surprise. Arsenal fans are usually advocating for Jack to feature in some role or the other. Yeah. But it also seemed like people were advocating for some sort of rotation. Looking at the Man United game this weekend, people were expecting that, you know, there might be some players who might play who usually, as Tony said, don't fit into our strongest 11. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, actually, I was the one who thought we'd be rotating for the game. And I even thought, I think Ramsey, who runs a lot, I think we'll be giving him a rest. I thought Koscielny will be rested for sure because of his Achilles problem. Then I think Mustafi's coming back from an injury. So I thought we'll be resting some players. But actually, I was discussing with you all on the podcast, on our group. And I think Tess came out and said it's all about building the momentum. So I think that's why Wenger chose that team. And I think they performed very well. Overall, we can say they performed very well. And it doesn't matter if they're all fit for the game on Saturday.
You do say perform very well, and I agree. And so does the scoreline. But Tony, it seemed like after giving up a corner within the first minute, we sort of did really well to score that early goal. But wasn't it flat till the time we scored for the second goal?
It was really weird because I don't know if it was complacency, but we went 1-0 up and we looked good, but they weren't pressing the ball at all. So it's like our players down tools because they wasn't being challenged. But it's the balls they gave away. So unlike not only Arsenal, any professional footballer, because there was no pressure on them. You can half understand a bad pass under pressure. Like, I know Xhaka has been hammered a lot this season for some of the goals he's given away, like Leicester and Everton, but both times he was under heavy pressure from a player. in this game, no one was under pressure. Huddersfield was sort of content to let us have the ball. And I think that bred sloppiness because the players weren't being challenged. And it was, to be honest, I turned and said to the guy that sits next to me at 1-0 that this will either be 4 or 5-0 or 1-0. Because they could have easily scored, let's not kid ourselves. But I knew once we got the second, if we got the second, that they would, their resolve would go. And it's exactly what happened. Literally, with you can see when a team drops. When there's 3 goals in 5 minutes in the Premier League, it's usually because one team have obviously done very well, but it's usually because the other team as well have lost it a bit. So yeah, it was weird. I don't, as I said, was it complacency? Was it the lack of challenge? I don't know, but it is a dangerous precedent to set.
Savvy, what are your thoughts on our first goal? Quick, out of the blocks. I know I just said that Huddersfield had a corner within the first minute, but what felt like was our first true attack. I say true because that was a moment when I think Alexis lost the ball, but we were not really close to the goal at that point. But our first true attack, Ramsey with a good flick on, which got a slight deflection, and Lacazette with the easy finish.
Yeah, I think it was a brilliant goal, and I think we started the game really well. I know Huddersfield got the corner, but we looked very sharp when we started the game. I think Ramsey, Lacazette, even Ozil in the build-up did very well for the goal. And we were, even Xhaka who gave that ball and Ramsey flicked it on to Lacazette. I think it was a brilliant pass. It was brilliant vision or a brilliant flick by Ramsey and super finish by Lacazette. And I think I really like that finish. He's looking like a striker who just gets a good chance and he scores. And I really like those kind of strikers. And but after that, we kind of slept and lacked the urgency until we scored the second goal, which was very late in the game, around, I think, 68 minutes. So for that, we have to address that situation. Otherwise, it was a good game and it was a brilliant performance.
Yeah, we will get into that and we'll get into the other goals and we'll, of course, reminisce on some of the beautiful football that Arsenal Football Club are clearly capable of playing. But I'm going to go to Tony for this because as someone who goes to the games and interacts with fans at the Emirates, I'm curious to know what fans think about Lacazette, specifically the bright contrast we see between his performances at home and away. I'm not criticizing the player for his away performances. I'm just passing a remark on his goal-scoring record, which seems to be quite a full tilt.
I mean, in terms of the fans, I think, look, if you look on paper and go home amount of goals versus away goals, then he's obviously scored more at home. But if you look at the reality, he didn't start at Liverpool. He didn't start at City. And so I think per minute, it's probably not far off being even, I would imagine. It's always easier to play at home, especially when you're Arsenal, because you're going to have so much more of the ball and it gives you a chance to score goals. Also, if you look at the teams we've played away from home, we've had Chelsea, Liverpool and City, whereas our only top team we've played at home have been Tottenham, if you class the seventh place in the Premier League as a top team. So I think if you just look at facts away versus home, then obviously his home is better. But if you dig deeper into it, it's not. I don't think it's anything that anyone sees as a problem. In terms of what the fans think of him, everyone seems to be coming around. He gets a lot of, because he's the new £50 million sort of golden boy or record signing whatnot. A lot of people were, for me at the start, either praising him unjustly or just giving him a pass because they wanted him to be so good that when he'd done something wrong, they were like, oh, it doesn't matter. But I think, as I said, in the last month, I think he's just improved massively. Like everything that I came on here and complained and said I wanted him to do, and I'm not saying he listened to this and decided that Tony Bloke's intelligent, but everything that I were moaning about, him not running channels, him not physically putting up enough of a battle, even if he knows it's one he's got to lose. He's now started doing all them things. And for me, yesterday, I know he went off at half time, but that was the best 45 minutes he's had in an Arsenal shirt, even if he hadn't have scored. The chip over the keeper as well was outrageous. If that goes in, yeah, I think the ref would have blown the final whistle when everyone would have gone home happy. I literally, everything, he ran channels well. He showed some good, like, really tricky, neat feet, which we've not seen from him yet. Not in an Arsenal shirt. Obviously, we saw it at Lyon. But he beat people with trickery, pace. He battled in the air. He might not have won too much, but at least he put up the challenge and made life hard for their defenders. I think it was pretty much a complete performance for 45 minutes. So he's, like, I've got friends that I go with that, for the whole, up until 3 weeks ago, they'd have said, I can't believe he's starting over Giroud. And personally, I think there was a case for that as well. But I think the last 3 weeks to a month, ironically, probably since he came on as a sub against City, I think we've seen his true worth.
I think you're exactly right there, especially yesterday. I mean, apart from the goal, he was defensively active. We saw him chasing the ball back, and there were instances where he was close to the touchline, you know, and you, as you said, his quick feet got him away, got a couple of balls into the box, and he was really involved, and maybe that is sort of what led to the suspected groin injury. Savi, I'll come to you for this. As Tony said, he is a £50 million investment. So I'm sure that people at Arsenal Football Club are going to take good care of him and, you know, try and get him back healthy as soon as possible. But is he going to be that much of a miss?
I think he would be, judging on the current form. I think he's looked very sharp. And for me, he's been one of the best players in recent weeks. And he's really grown into the game. And I think his settling in period has gone and he's really settled well with the team. So he would be a very, very big miss. And especially United haven't played against him before. So that could have been a surprise. And with Giroud and Welbeck, they know what they will get. So it will be a big miss, in my opinion. But I think Giroud or Welbeck, whoever starts, can make up for that.
Tony, thoughts?
In a way, I've just obviously clearly sung his praises, but I don't, it depends on how we get players around him. If we, obviously he's not going to play, but I don't think some of the games we sort of left him to battle with the two big centre-backs, and United obviously have Matic screening as well if he's fit. And I don't think Lacazette would get much change out of that, and I think we would, the ball would be coming back at us quite a lot if the ball doesn't stick to him. So I don't think it's as big a loss as it should be losing someone who's playing as well as he is recently. Whereas, I mean, I will probably get onto this later, but I think he'll probably start Welbeck, which then still gives you the options to run the channel. He's still strong, he's still big. We just lose the chance of our striker ever actually scoring.
Stepping away from the United game and sort of considering our next run of few fixtures, we're getting into that time of the year when we have, you know, three fixtures in possibly 6 or 7 days. Considering that and squad depth, do you think he'll be a miss in that case? Because we have players who are attackers and, you know, who can play in that front three or across that front three. But missing someone like Lacazette, in terms of squad depth, do you think that's going to be somewhere we will have to struggle? Or it gives the likes of Eddie Nketiah to step up and, you know, show their strength in the Carabao Cup?
Well, the thing is, I mean, I know on paper Arsenal Football Club do have 2-3 games a week for pretty much the month of December, but in reality we don't. It's not like normal years where we have a massive fixture pile up. Yes, we have the same amount of fixtures, but we've got a Europa League, which wouldn't have been a first team anyway, and is already a dead rubber. So the first team players probably don't even know we're playing that night. We've got West Ham in the Carabao Cup. Again, the first team players won't get there. They're the likes of, as you said, Eddie Nketiah will play. So it's not, we're not missing him for as many games. We don't know how long he's out for yet, as far as I know, unless any of you can correct me on that. I think we've got adequate cover, very different. Not as clinical, for sure, but they offer very different things, either Giroud or Welbeck. Or there is an option, someone mentioned it yesterday, to play Alexis up top. In a player, he's a bit more similar to Lacazette in that he's small, he runs the channels, and he battles in the air. Whether he's very good at it is a different story. And then play a Welbeck or a Jack in behind. So there's a few options there. I think it's not necessarily just looking at the strikers saying, oh, Lacazette's out, so we're now down to Giroud or Welbeck. I think, as I just said, you could move Sanchez there, and then it brings Iwobi and Jack into the equation as for the extra squad depth. I think it's pretty much accepted with Arsenal that our squad depth in most areas, there's some that were a bit short, but our squad depth's pretty good going all the way through, pretty much, I think it is.
You make a good point there about Alexis, and we'll come back to that regarding him playing up top for the United game. Let's come back to this Huddersfield game real quick. The first half, I would say boring. We were not clinical. We created almost half chances, which I think at this point I'm just flattering the team. But something seemed off. Passes weren't clicking. Hector had a cross, which went into the stands. Kolasinac had a reverse ball, which usually is on point, but Grant never followed up his run. Alexis had a whack at the ball, which he completely missed. We seemed a little slow out of the blocks. I think that first goal sort of made us more complacent. Would you agree with that, Savvy?
Yeah, actually, completely agree with that. I think scoring that first goal, actually, we kind of thought that we are the better team and they were not pressing high. And it all went, the team went to sleep. There was complacency. The passes were sloppy. And there was lack of urgency. So it was very, very, very weak. Or I should say the players looked disinterested at times. And then everybody, even for a player like Monreal, who doesn't do much wrong, he was also misplacing passes. So it looked very weird. But we made up for that in the second half. And it was very strange to see, because we were at home and the atmosphere was very good. The fans were cheering on, and I don't know why players did that, but we clearly corrected it after the half time.
I think that's spot on, and a wise man once said that football is a game of two halves, and we really showed that yesterday, didn't we, Tony?
Yeah, I'd say in that, I think yes and no. I think we was awful for the first 15 minutes of the second half as well. I think we was probably worse for the first 15 minutes of the second half than we was at any point of the first half. As I said, they had a chance. Cech made a good save with his feet from Kwama, whatever his name is.
And one Monreal block, I think, where they went.
Monreal block, and then Cech punching it onto the bar.
That was weird, wasn't it? It was almost like a slap, almost how you would hit a volleyball.
Yeah, I think he thought he was just underneath the crossbar, so he was just trying to tap it over. I think he completely lost his bearings.
Yeah, so I had my heart in my mouth during that.
For once, I thought he's pushing it inside.
Would have been disastrous.
So I wouldn't so much say as a game of two halves. As I think both managers came out and said after the game, the second goal completely killed the game. And had that came after 30 minutes, 35, I think we would have seen a better performance from then. It was just, I think, a bit of, as I said, they took their foot off the gas. And I mean, there's an old saying in football that once you take it off, it's very hard to pull it back on. That's pretty much what happened. But then once we got the second, they dropped off, our confidence came back a bit. And then we showed what we really can do. I thought before the game that they had a very hard game on Sunday in terms of the amount of run to do. And then again, where we had the majority of possession yesterday, again, it was a lot of running, even though we were given the ball where they still had to chase it. So I think they were always going to fatigue around the 70th, 65th, 70th, unless we gave them something to sort of get the adrenaline pumping. If we didn't give them anything, I thought their legs were always going to go, or very likely to go.
Were you surprised that Huddersfield matched us man for man? I mean, usually they play a four-man defense. I'm not going to try and be a Huddersfield expert here. This is just what I heard from Mr. Martin Tyler, who was on call for us here in the States. But do you think that was a surprising move from David Wagner's side to match us person for person, considering the gulf in class on paper?
I think he'd done it to try and stop getting outnumbered in midfield. But what I was very surprised at, and, well, I say surprised because I don't usually see it at the Emirates, but if I look at David Wagner, I'm not too surprised it happened, is that they were leaving two or three players up, which is almost unheard of with teams that come to the Emirates. Usually a team loses the ball against us and everyone gets behind the ball. Whereas Demi, he played, I think, in a way, you've got to give him credit because he didn't come to park the bus. He went for it, so to speak. There was maybe a drop-off in quality. I think, unfortunately for him, but not so much for us, there's very few teams that can come to the Emirates and and try and play against us. I think the logical way, if I was a manager of another team, I would come and park the bus, but he didn't. Fair play to him. But I'm not surprised that they tried to match the numbers in midfield, because although it looks like we only play a two-man midfield, if you look at the formation, you know Ozil's never going to be on the touchline. You know Sanchez is never going to be on the touchline. So it becomes a four very quickly. And if you don't match us up, then you're just never going to get the ball. An unsung Arsenal, you're just never going to get the ball off us. Because if we've got an extra man and the players are technically that good anyway, which our attacking players are, it's very, very difficult to deal with that.
You say an unsung Arsenal, and I think that's the perfect segue to talk about the second goal. God damn, when we're unsung, we're so easy in the eye, and it's so beautiful to watch. Aren't we, Savvy?
Yeah, I think it was a brilliant, brilliant goal. It was Ozil masterclass. I think the 3 minutes where he scored, I think he assisted 2 goals and scored one. I think it was brilliant play by us. And mostly whenever we score a very good, beautiful goal, mostly Giroud is at the end of it. And so was the case this time. The second goal, Giroud scored it. And then I think everyone was great for that goal, even Alexis giving it back to Ozil and on one touch. And Kolasinac giving it back to Ozil when he just gave him back to him after a very good layoff, I would say. And it was a very good goal. Then I think he followed it up with another assist. I think he meant it for Giroud, but it went to Alexis, who actually, in my thought, didn't have a very good game, but he finished it very well and got his goal. And then for his goal, I think it was another brilliant move. And Ozil was, I think they couldn't handle him. He was faultless, beautiful, and whatever. He was gliding in that midfield. And actually, since the start, when we were being sloppy, I think Ozil had a very good game. And it was a 10 on 10 performance by him.
Masterclass indeed. Any more thoughts on Mesut, Tony?
Just like, again, I say this every week and we said it before, but anyone that's ever even kicked a football, how Ozil does that finish, and he does it when he's passing quite a lot as well, I still, like, I don't understand the science of it.
That bubble, right?
Yeah, he does it all the time, but I really don't understand. Like, if I tried that, I'm breaking my ankle. Like, I hope there's someone that can explain it to me, because he kicks a ball that's already, I can understand if it's bouncing, kicking it into the ground and then it lifting up, mm-hmm. but when the ball is flat on the ground, I fully don't understand how the ball comes up. He must kick it with such force into the ground that it comes up, but that must hurt, surely.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem like he's kicking with a lot of force, doesn't it? It just feels like it's a regular pass, and all of a sudden the ball has this new physics on it, which is not what you would expect at all. And I think that's one of the reasons that the Huddersfield goalkeeper, Lozel, got confused, because I think he was probably expecting a pass, but what he saw was a pass shot in the most Ozil-esque manner.
Yeah, I think he did that against Chelsea also last year. I think it's really magical what he does, but it was... actually, I play football, and actually, I haven't ever seen someone doing that. And we know he's technically very, and that's why maybe it's something he must have invented.
Well, you say that you play football as well, and you are not as good technically, but Savvy, let me tell you that once a man once said he shall remain unnamed. But a man once said that there is no carbon copy of Mesut Ozil, not even a bad one. So
no,
don't feel bad for yourself.
I don't even want to be. Yeah, I would.
Sharp contrast. Once again, relying on our theme of contrast. As good as Mesut Ozil was, what happened to Alexis Sanchez yesterday, Tony?
I mean, as a team, we were pretty much sloppy in that. I'd say it was a half-hour spell, probably from half-hour into the game till about the 60th minute, either side of half-time. The whole team was sloppy, and Alexis is generally sloppy anyway. So he just fitted right into his mould again. I thought him and Xhaka were terrible in that period. They were our two worst. But as I said, Alexis is sloppy at the best of times. Even when he's playing unbelievably well, he's sloppy. I don't think he was any worse than I've seen him 10, 20, 30 times before. He wasn't good, but I've seen him do it loads of times and get man in a match for a very similar performance. If we win that game 2-0 and he scores a second, he gets man in a match. This is like as simple as that, but that's what he does. He's bad, not really involved in the game, tries and messes up our own system by coming short to get the ball when we don't need him there. He kept doing that yesterday, which was winding me up. But then gets a goal or gets an assist. He is what I'd say is he's a complete output player. If you watch a game, you think one thing of him. If you look at his stats at the end of the game in terms of assists or goals, you think a completely different thing. If you watch football with your eyes, you won't rate him as highly as if you watch football with stats. And I think he's just that type of player. And I've come to accept that.
It's a good point. Coming to your point on Xhaka, I think you're right. He had a balanced game. I mean, as you said, the first half was poor, the second half not so much. But Ramsey, his movement and his awareness. I mean, of course, that first assist that he got a little bit of luck thanks to that deflection. But the awareness to know Lacazette's movement, and then he was very involved in the second half, leading to an assist, and he played in that ball that released Mesut Ozil so that he could find Alexis Sanchez for the goal. So I thought Ramsey had a very good performance, and if it wasn't for Mesut Ozil's masterclass, I would advocate for him to be the man of the match.
Can I just butt in with one point there? If anyone can rewatch the first half, especially if there's like a camera view where you can see a lot of the pitch. For pretty much all of the first half, Xhaka was in a more advanced role than Ramsey.
I noticed that.
Absolutely no idea why. I don't know what benefit they tried to get from it. It was just weird. I was sitting in the ground like utterly confused. Back to your point, yeah, he was good. Again, he went through a sloppy spell with the rest of the team. He wasn't as bad as some of the other players. But I think everyone went through that spell. I think even Ozil gave away balls that you might not class as sloppy, but for him, they're sloppy. When you know what his passing's like, he doesn't give them balls away, and he did. So I think everyone went through that spell. But I would say that Ozil was clearly man in a match, and I would say Ramsey or Lacazette are our second best players. Obviously, it's difficult. I would have said Lacazette if he played longer, but... Yeah. I would probably say he was our best player in the first half. I actually thought he was better than Ozil in the first half, Lacazette. Ramsey was good, but it was just weird seeing him in it. It seemed like a much more withdrawn role with Xhaka pushing on forward. It didn't quite make sense to me, and I don't understand what they were trying to gain. But Wenger knows better than me, and it must have been planned because it was happening so often.
Yeah, definitely some film study required there. We can't afford to give up positioning like that, especially during this game and during this weekend, because United will look to exploit our tactical mistakes, and we cannot afford to have only two men in midfield and then have those two men be out of position at times. But we'll come back to that later. Two players we haven't spoken about quite yet are Sead Kolasinac and Hector Bellerin. Now, we know that Hector has sort of been, let's say, not going full tilt at times, maybe because of depth, maybe because he hasn't quite found his confidence form, whatever you want to call it. But I thought Kolasinac had a good game, and especially towards the end. I thought in the beginning he was weak, his passes were astray. But in the build-up to that final goal, I thought he sort of made amends for himself. What do you think, Savvy?
Yeah, I think Kolasinac, I think he didn't have a very good first half. And defensively, as we have said, when he went forward, he wasn't tracking players back. But it wasn't a very big team, and they didn't have much threat on that right side. So it didn't matter much. But yeah, as you said, some of his passes were astray when he started the game. And some things were not coming off for him. But... after that spell where we just killed the game, I think after that he looked very good and he was combining very well, and he clearly wanted to score goals. I think he had two or three shots, and Giroud clearly robbed him of the goal because he was going to score it, and Giroud just kicked the ball into the net. Otherwise, he would have got the goal, but he got the assist, so he won't mind that being a defender. But I think he can improve upon his defensive performance, and I think he'll have to do that against United because they won't be as easy as Huddersfield. And I think he did well against Spurs, and that was the big game we played at home recently. So I think he'll just repeat that performance.
Any thoughts on our wingbacks, Tony? Were you impressed? Were you okay with a little bit of a dip in performance, considering this was the first midweek game our strongest team was playing, or were you expecting a little more?
You can't fault their energy. I wasn't, because they played two. And look, these players are used to playing 2-3 times a week every week. So to be at the first game of the first time they've had to do it, I would be very disappointed if there was a drop off in fatigue. But there, I mean, there wasn't. Kolasinac has a very big technical flaw in his game in that he always tries to nick in front of the defender of the winger. So when a ball's coming in, he tries to take it in front, and it looks spectacular when it comes off. But the amount of times that he gets spun in behind, and sometimes the ball doesn't make it or the ball's overhit, but you can still see that the deficiency is there. And I think against a better team or better quality of player, it will be exploited. I think sometimes he needs to just face the winger up and let the winger have the ball in front of him rather than trying to dive in, nick it in front of them, and then getting caught out of position. And he does it way too much for my liking. I thought he was not very good, not very bad until the second goal. And as you said, after that, he came into his own. I think it was... No, it must have, I don't know. He had a good chance. Welbeck had an air shot that came to Kolasinac at the back post.
Yeah, he couldn't sort his feet. You're right.
Well, he should have. Yeah. It's very similar to his goal against Swansea. He should have just hit it, but he tried to be too clever. But I don't know if that was due to the situation in the game. I mean, was it 3 or 4-0 by then? I think 4. So you can afford a player trying a little bit extra when it's 4-0. But he should have just hit it. But no, I mean, it's not a big criticism of his performance, but that one technical flaw has been there since day one. And luckily, we haven't conceded from it, although you could argue that when Sterling got the penalty against us, people are moaning at Monreal for the foul, because obviously it was Monreal that fouled him. But when you figure out that Sterling was playing on the right wing and Kolasinac was nowhere to be seen, again, it was because he tried to nick in front of him. Whereas I think sometimes you just need to hold your ground and face him up. But I wouldn't say it's a bad performance. And obviously you asked about Hector as well. And I think with the amount I tend to criticise him, me saying nothing is as much of a compliment as anything else.
Fair enough. I think a good performance, 3 points, 5 goals, good for the goal difference, which I think is a point that we haven't touched upon yet, considering how close the table is right now. If that is any projection for how things are going to be at the end of the season, then having 5 goals under our belt in a game like this is, of course, helpful. I think it's safe to say that we're all relieved that Mustafi is not injured, unlike Lacazette. He seemed to have taken a knock early in the game, but he carried on and seemed to have run it off. So I think we're all in accordance here that this was the sort of performance we would have wished for. The sort of result we would have wished for, maybe not the performance. But I'm sure it gives our players a lot of confidence going into the United game, especially Giroud, or Welbeck. I mean, I personally think Giroud will be starting, and we'll get into that. But if he does start, then those 2 goals are something that would have, you know, really given him a push and a boost. So any final thoughts on the Huddersfield game, lads? I will take that as a no. All right, let's move forward and talk about the big one. Saturday, the late kickoff is Arsenal versus Manchester United. I don't think that needs to be said again. In terms of team news, we know Lacazette is probably most certainly going to be missing. We do have all our other players in full health. No other injuries have been reported ever since. For Man United, there is a suspected injury for Nemanja Matic, who subbed off midweek. It seemed like he had pulled something. I am just purely speculating here, and there is no update that I know of that says whether he will be available or not. In other news, Lukaku somehow did not get a ban for his double kick on Bong, so he will be available as well for Man United. Let's go with Tony on this one. What is your expected lineup?
So I think 10 of the players picked themselves, the only question is who starts up front. And I think, as I said earlier, I think he'll go with Welbeck for two reasons. One, he offers more mobility than Giroud. And two, he's equally, if it's not working, if we're still in the game, say after 20 minutes, it's still 0-0, but it's not quite. You switch with Alexis and it changes things. You lose a bit of height, but you gain a bit of trickery and you gain some more pace on the wings and more direct running. So I think just because it offers a number of options, I think it will be Danny over Giroud. To be honest, even though Ollie came on and got two yesterday, I didn't think he played that well. I thought his link-up play was very loose for him. I thought he obviously missed the open goal.
That was very bad.
Yeah. So
is that the one where he hit the post? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. I mean, okay, I say open goal, at least half the goal was open, and any Premier League striker should be scoring that.
You got to be finishing that, no doubt, yeah.
Especially on his stronger foot. You could make half an excuse if he went round the keeper and he was on his swinger, as we call it, but he wasn't. That's where he wanted the ball. I mean, him scoring two will pose a problem for Wenger in that it's hard to drop someone that's played 45 minutes and scored two goals, but for me, I think for the good of the team, my personal opinion, even though, don't get me wrong, I prefer Olivier Giroud to Danny Welbeck as a player, but I think for what we need on Saturday, Danny Welbeck would be the right option.
Xavi, would you prefer Danny Welbeck to Olivier Giroud as well?
Yeah, actually, I agree to that. I think I prefer Danny Welbeck. But the thing is, I would go with Alexis up top and Welbeck on the wings, because I think recently Alexis Sanchez hasn't been doing the defensive work which we are expecting of him very well. He's not tracking back, and that leaves us too exposed at times. So I would go with Welbeck on the left-hand side and Alexis Sanchez up top, where he can fight with the defenders. I wouldn't go with Olivier Giroud, because especially coming on as a substitute, he's been very good, and he has been good in big games. I think he scored against United last season away, which was a very good game, which was a very good goal. And I think he'll be a good option from the bench, but I wouldn't start him, because Welbeck, he'll be playing against his own club, and he'll be really up for the game, and I expect others to be up for the game similarly. But I think Welbeck has a point to prove, and whenever he has played for us this season, he has been very good. He's got some goals and assists. So even I'll go with Welbeck, and the rest of the lineup, that picks itself. So yeah, Alexis up top and Welbeck on the wings for me.
Just one thing I forgot to mention, and I done this exactly the same on Sunday. Something that I think we all discount, and when it happens, we're like, oh, that's no surprise. I don't know why none of us are mentioning Alex Iwobi. When, you know, Wenger loves him in big games because he presses well and he holds the ball well most of the time. So, I similar to Man City away, he moved Alexis up top and played Iwobi on the left. And that would be exactly the same team. If he does that, it would mean, apart from Mustafi for Coquelin, it would be exactly the same team that played at the Etihad. So, I wouldn't do that. I just think we'd be stupid to discount it.
I think you make a fair point there. But I think it's all about the game that is Man United. I think Danny Welbeck is getting the nod from most fans as of now because of his connection to Man United. I mean, I'm not discounting his quality or lack thereof. I'm just saying that when it comes to such fixtures, then that sort of spirit and, you know, that sort of attitude to want to prove your old team wrong is a big factor in driving your motivation. And you're right. I mean, in most situations, especially when Danny Welbeck is still coming back from injury, you know, he hasn't played a whole lot of minutes. Alex Iwobi would be someone that Wenger would look out for. But if for some reason Alex Iwobi is the one who started and Danny Welbeck and Olivier Giroud find themselves on the bench, they'll both be at the boss's office the next morning. That what do we need to do here to get a start? I mean, I scored two goals on the bench, and then you have Danny Welbeck who says I scored against Man United, and, you know, I want to prove myself. And I think the boss would have a problem that he probably wouldn't want.
My argument against that would be that, like you saying, Welbeck says, I want to prove myself. Well, I mean, pretty much that's what the Europa League and the Carabao Cup's for. And this is not so much against Danny Welbeck because he's been injured, but Giroud has now scored more league goals than he has in the Cups, despite playing 90 minutes in the Cup game and not making a Premier League start. You know, and regular listeners know, I rant about this all the time. If he put in the effort in them games that he puts in when he plays in the Premier League, we wouldn't be having this question. He would definitely be starting on Saturday. But he's failed his audition, so to speak, time and time and time again. So you saying, oh, they'll be knocking on his door saying, I want to prove myself. We've given him that platform. There's your stage. Go and be the top goal scorer. It was good enough for Ibrahimovic last year. Why does Giroud think that it's beneath him? Like, that's when you prove yourself. And I don't think Wenger particularly cares about players coming to knock on his door anyway. But he would have a very valid response in my eyes. And as I said, I would start Danny, but I'm just playing devil's advocate that we know Wenger likes Iwobi. He likes him in the big games. And none of the three, Iwobi hasn't proved himself. Welbeck is a bit unfortunate he's been injured. And Giroud definitely hasn't proved himself. So whichever one, two of them are going to feel hard done by. Jack's potentially going to feel hard done by, because I'd say he's, in terms of proving himself, if Alexis is playing, going to play up top, Jack's probably proved himself more than any of the Iwobi, Welbeck and Giroud. So either way, there's going to be unhappy players, but I welcome that, because that means they're fighting to get in the team. I think in years gone by, we've had too many players that are content with making the match day squad and maybe getting 20 minutes at the end.
Just on Iwobi, and either of you can answer this, in this season, whenever I've watched him, and I'm going on a little bit of a tangent here, but since we were talking about Iwobi, I think it's fair to bring him up. But I feel like he pushes really hard. I know Wenger picks him for his strength, as Tony mentioned, for his press, as Tony mentioned. But do either of you think that he runs out of gas by the 55th, 60th minute just because of him not managing his energy well?
He bulked up, and over the summer he bulked up a lot, and obviously that's going to take an effect on your stamina, especially when you're young. I think we do forget that he's still quite young. And a lot of high press players, which he is, he clearly is, are usually only utilised. I think we're becoming more like rugby in a sense that there's players for specific things, and that's what they're utilised for. There's not many, look, I mean, everyone can name someone, but a majority of high press players, that seriously high press players, are there until the 70, and after 70 you tend not to press because the other team are knackered anyway, and they're not going to be playing with the ball as much at the back. It's fair. I mean, even unless they're desperately chasing something, even if you watch City, who most people would probably say are the best at pressing at the moment, after 70 onwards they tend not to, because you can't do it for that long. It's the same as that Brendan Rodgers Liverpool side that came second. It was always thought that if you're in the game after 70 minutes, you've got as good a chance as any, because they run their nuts off to that 70, and after that they don't have too much left. But that team was good enough, and especially with the likes of Luis Suarez, that by 70 the game tended to be over.
Well, for anyone listening, if you want to find that player, you can find Tony at @clockhand_talk. He'd be more than happy to speak to you guys, and he'd be more than happy to talk to you about how he's wrong. Savvy, moving on to you. The last five games United have played, they've shown a few good string of results. They won this week, this midweek against Watford 4-2. Then they beat Brighton this past weekend, and a win against Newcastle the weekend before that. The weekend before that was when they lost to Chelsea 1-0. So they are on a good string of form. What do you expect from this game?
Actually, they are on good form if we look at the results. But if we look at the performances, I think the best game they have played was Newcastle in those last four games.
That was the first game that Pogba came back, didn't he?
Yeah. And they weren't that good at Chelsea. And I think against Brighton also, it was a fluke goal which got them the 3 points. Otherwise, Brighton did very well to hold on to a 0-0 draw. And then on against Watford, I think they were they actually kind of gave up when Watford scored two goals, two quick goals. And then I think Lingard scored a very beautiful goal and that got them back into the game. Otherwise, it could have been easily a 3-3 or even Watford going on to win that game like they did against us. So I don't think their performances have been very good. And we know Mourinho, how he picks his team against a big club and especially it's at Emirates. Clearly, he'll be parking the bus. I think Lukaku will be isolated and he'll be looking to at least get a draw, which he usually does against big teams. So I expect us to have a lot of the ball, but we have to be smart with the ball and especially with Ozil being on form and other players stepping up. I think we can beat them easily because I know they are defensively very good and I expect them to match us. I think they'll be going with three at the back. Ashley Young has been in very good form recently. So he'll be starting as the wing back. Then I think yeah, we can beat them if we keep the ball well and do certain things well and we press them higher. But let's see how the players do. But I have high hopes from that game, especially judging our recent home form, which has been exceptional. And I think we on footballing basis, I think we are a better team than United. So I expect a lot from from Gunners.
Thoughts, Tony? Do you also expect them to line up in a 3 or 5 defender system?
I disagree with pretty much most of what Savvy just said. It's obviously why we love
for
the game.
For all you listeners that call us biased, see, we don't always agree with ourselves.
I don't think... Look, Mourinho's got a track record and he's won numerous titles on if you don't lose to the big team, your direct rivals away, then you're not going to be far off. But I think with the gap that's already there, 8 points at the moment, if they get a draw, if he parts the bus and they get a draw, and look, City are going to beat West Ham, that's 10 points. That's crazy at this stage of the season. So I don't think he can afford to come and play for a 0-0. His ego might make him because you know he hates losing at the Emirates. But I think it would be bad management to do that. Also, I don't think they will match us up for formation because it would pretty much mean that they have to drop Pogba or leave Matic so isolated that it's outrageous. He's not going to drop Pogba. And I think it's interesting, all the games, especially this season, where he's parked the bus, so he went to Anfield and parked the bus, he went to Chelsea and attempted to park the bus, they were both without Pogba. I think it's very difficult to park the bus when you've got Pogba playing, unless you play him as one of the two behind the striker, but then you lose so much. So I think if you look at their likely lineup, I can't see how they will go 5 at the back, because if Matic is fit, he's going to play, but then there's only room for one other central midfielder, and you'd assume that's got to be Pogba, but that doesn't give them anywhere near enough protection unless he then plays Herrera there and moves Pogba forward. But then that means it's going to be Pogba behind Lukaku with one of Martial, Lingard, Rashford. I don't think he'd want to leave two of them and Ibrahimovic on the bench. I'm not saying he's going to come out all guns blazing and it will probably be a very tight first half. He won't want to lose it inside the first 20 minutes. But I don't expect him to actively want a 0-0 draw like we have seen previously. And as I said, just because of the Pogba issue, I don't think that they will park the bus and I definitely don't think they'll change shape. It'll be interesting. I'm not sure. I don't think Pogba's ever played for them with a 5 at the back. So again, someone could correct me.
Because, no, he hasn't, actually, as far as I know.
It leaves the one central midfielder very isolated. And as I said, we assume that'll be Matic. And I rate Matic very highly, but he's not got the legs to play that role on his own. He's not a Kante who has seemingly unlimited energy. Matic relies more on positioning, but if he's got no one alongside him, if Ozil and Sanchez are our two behind the striker, there's going to be two Arsenal players there versus Matic.
And they'll run circles around him.
Yeah, exactly. You can't position. It don't matter how good your position is. If you've got two especially very good footballers, as a direct rival, it's always going to be difficult.
Just
actually, I thought that. I thought because we have been doing very good at home recently. I think Emirates has turned into a fortress. So that's why I thought he'll try and match us. But I think Tony has made some good points. So I kind of agree to that also. But let's see what it does.
I think both of you make fair points. And I think the difficulty with projecting what someone like Mourinho will do is that he's Mourinho. And usually anyone would assume that, you know, he would play a more pragmatic game and sort of sit back, as Savvy you earlier mentioned. But considering the complexion of the table right now, I think Tony makes a fair point, because if Man United are not challenging for the top, having spent all this money and having accumulated all these world beaters, then he's going to be in a rut, and Mourinho would not going to be happy with that. Coming back to what Tony was mentioning about Matic, and Tony, I'll stick with you on this. Let's assume for the sake of this podcast that he is going to be missing for the game on Saturday. What tactical shift and or person do you expect to fill in for him?
I mean, there's one of two options. They either go with Herrera, who probably keeps the ball a bit better, obviously doesn't have the physical aspect, but is more mobile and is more likely to be able to give the ball, or better at giving the ball to the attacking players, or to Pogba, who we assume will be alongside him. Or Fellaini, because he thinks Arsenal were a soft touch physically. And then it also gives them a massive height advantage at set pieces. And if we high press, then Fellaini will step up 10 yards and it gives them a perfect target for the long ball as well. So I think they'll go with three in the middle. And I think it will be Pogba, Herrera, and if not Matic, then I would probably go with Fellaini. I think last year you put Mata in there. But I don't think that there's not defensively secure enough if he goes Pogba, Mata, and Herrera. So it's difficult. As I said, I think it'll be a three with Pogba, Herrera, and Fellaini probably.
All right. So Man United.
Well, actually, saying that, I think Matic will be fit. I don't really think there's much of a doubt from what I've seen. So that scenario is a what if, but I don't want to say confident, because that would be if I was a Man United fan, but I'm pretty sure he's going to play.
Fair enough. Man United right now are in second position with 32 points, and we are in fourth with 28 points. A win would seemingly put us in third position if Chelsea draw points this weekend. So let's get around to predictions now. Savvy, let's start with you.
Yeah, I'm going for, I think, 2-1 win to us.
Tony?
10-0.
As always. So Tony has us moving.
You were saying about the table, if we win, we go 1 point behind them. Their next game is Man City as well.
That's true. Yeah. And I was just reading yesterday that Manchester City are on a 12-game winning streak, I believe, 11-game winning streak. Yeah, and if they win this weekend, that would be their 12th. That would be their 13th, which would equal our record from 2001-02 and Chelsea's record from last season. So if they don't beat the record overall, that there is a good chance of that since they're playing Man United. But in terms of my prediction, I think it's going to be a tough game. I see a glimmer of hope. I think we proved ourselves worthy opponents, and we showed that we have been on song for the last 2-3 games. So I'm going to go for a 3-0 win to the Arsenal. Any more comments on this game, guys? I will take that as a no yet again. All right, moving on to a few questions, and I'm sorry for our listeners. We weren't able to get that information out that we'll be asking questions and recording a podcast today. But we do have a few questions from last week and a few questions from this week that we have come up with on our own. So let's get started on that. My first question to you guys, and I will go to Savvy first, is that from the 5 goals that we scored yesterday, I thought we saw a few different kinds of goals that Arsenal can score. The first one was a little more build-up. The second one was Ozil slaloming his way into the goal, essentially, and helping Giroud with that.
Yeah.
The third showed a little bit of counterattack and a little bit of creativity, and you know, so on and so forth. So what was your favorite goal in isolation out of the five we scored yesterday?
Yeah, I think it's easy to pick. I think the second goal, where I think it was all one touch and Giroud finished the move. Ozil was sublime for that move. It was reminded me of that Rosicky or Jack Wilshere goal, which we all rave about. So the second goal we scored, I think it was the best of the lot.
Wonderful. Tony?
Yes, it's hard to disagree with what Sam said. That was probably the best football. I liked the third just because it was different, getting the ball out wide, not because you got to half assume that Giroud's not going to be there, because we tend to not play as a big man. So scoring a goal from across, it's just something different. And I think I always enjoy seeing something different, because it gives other teams something else to think about. Like, the amount of times teams will think, oh, we'll show Arsenal wide, especially if Giroud's not playing, we'll show Arsenal wide, and that's the majority of the danger covered. But we showed something different. And also, an Ozil assist with his right foot is pretty rare as well. Because again, if I was defending against Ozil as a left back, I'd show him onto his right foot all day, as I think any sensible defender would. So again, to get an assist with his right foot from across, again, it will put something in defenders' minds that they might think, well, we know we don't want to show him onto his left, but letting him go on his right isn't the best of ideas either.
Speaking of Giroud there, that brings me on to my second question, and Tony will stick with you on this. Is there a better finisher than Olivier Giroud on the near post?
Do you know what? 10 years ago, maybe 20 years ago, strikers would always say, make the run to the near post. Since teams stopped playing two up front and went to one, they tend to be a bigger man. You look at the top teams. You've got Kane, who's 6 foot plus, Lukaku's 6 foot plus, Morata's 6 foot plus, Giroud's obviously 6 foot plus. So they tend to go back post now and try and bully the fullback. I think Giroud is one of the... I was thinking about this last season. I don't think there's many others that still go to the front post. So saying, is he the best front post? He's a very good front post finisher, but he's not a big pool of players, because, as I said, the bigger man, Lewandowski probably being the best on the world stage, tends to go back post to try and bully the fullback. I think Kane this season's become a bit of an exception to that, where he seems to mix it up. It makes it harder for the person putting the ball in, because they don't know where he's going to go. But Giroud seems to routinely attack the front post, which, as I said, 10, 15 years ago was the golden rule as a striker. Like, if you ask Ian Wright says it all the time. We get him as doing a punditry a lot, and he always says, attack the front post. But it doesn't seem to happen much anymore. But yeah, Giroud is very good finishing there when the chance arises.
Savvy, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. I think Giroud is very good at it. And it reminds me of, I think, Mario Mandzukic. I think he does that very well. But yeah, Giroud, actually the good thing about that is our players know that he's going to attack the front post. So they just put the ball there for him, and he mostly scores. But it looks very good, and it's old school. As Tony said, it's old school that few years back they used to say that attack the front post, and it looks different also, because nowadays not many strikers are doing that. So yeah, he's probably one of the best.
Superb. All right, we have one question from last week that went unanswered, because this friend of ours sent the question as we were recording. So this is from Vish, that's V-I-S-H, at V-I-S-H-A-A-D. V-I-S-H-A-A-D. Thanks for your question, Vish. We'll stick with Savvy for this one, and we spoke about this a little bit earlier. So his question is, how about a discussion on what your thoughts are regarding the second team and the young guns? I got slated last night on FanZone for saying that Iwobi offers nothing to Arsenal. He is another Chamberlain 2.0. Runs like a headless chicken and no end product in the final third.
Yeah, I think he's not a headless chicken. Obviously, I agree his passing is not that good, and technically he's not that good of a player. He's not that good of a finisher as well. But we can all agree he's still very young and he can improve upon that. But what he brings to the team is very different, because if we go few years back, and we didn't have many pressers off the ball, and we were never a team who used to press high up or even try to press the opposition. But with Iwobi and players like Danny Welbeck, and even Oxlade Chamberlain did that very well. And I think this is the new element in the team, where we are pushing forward and we are pressing very high up. So I think Iwobi is very good at that, and he can improve upon his end product. We can all agree on that. And I think he can get better. He's no headless chicken, but obviously he can do better. And I hope he brings a lot to the team in the near future.
Anything you want to add on to that, Tony?
Yeah, I think we kind of, as a fan base, we need to stop this fallacy that Oxlade-Chamberlain was a bad player. I may be a bit biased, as everyone that listens regularly knows I know him. But look, he was a £40 million player with a year left on his contract. So saying he's an Oxlade-Chamberlain 2.0 for me is not anywhere near an insult. I personally don't think it will be as good as Oxlade-Chamberlain. He's younger, and look, he has a lot of improving to do. There's a lot of scope for improvement. Whether he does that is up to him. How hard he works, how luck goes for him. As I said, I think this is being a bit harsh. And as I said, if he becomes a Chamberlain 2.0, worst case scenario, you sell him for $40 million in the last year of his contract.
Fabulous. I will take a stab at this as well. And Vish, I think you're right. There are times when Iwobi can be, you know, misplaced in position, and he does make mistakes. But this response is not just for Iwobi, but for any young player, that these players, when they are being groomed, they will make mistakes, and every now and then they will be slated for their performances. I think as a fan base, we need to get behind them and hope that they do well, because there is nothing better than a youngster coming from within our ranks. And I mean, if you're able to save that money, and you know, instead of having to invest in that position, we can use those resources elsewhere. And as we've spoken about this many times before, that anyone who's homegrown will understand the love for the football club, like Jack does, there is nothing better than that. So I see your frustration, and maybe a lot of this frustration is driven by, you know, Iwobi being selected over some players in our starting 11 from time to time, but all we can do is hope that he turns out to be a superstar, and the only thing that can help him from our side is the support. So I understand your frustration, and all I will say to you is that let's hope he does well and goes on to become a brilliant player for Arsenal Football Club. Any questions that you guys might have that you guys want to bring up today?
I've got a kind of little rant that I want to go on.
Oh, please, by all means.
So, obviously, coming home from the game last night, looking at Twitter, and everyone saying, oh, but Ozil doesn't turn up in the big games. Like, Tottenham was a one-off, yes, he turned up. But yesterday was only Huddersfield, don't get excited. Look, the view is in the media, but it seems to be shared by a lot of Arsenal fans. And I want to know what people are watching. Like, this is just off the top of my head. I've literally done no research. So, at home, this season, he got an assist against Tottenham in our only big home game so far. Last season, he scored against Chelsea. He got an assist against Man City, an assist against Tottenham. Like, do they think not performing is not scoring every week? I don't understand. Like, there's been other things. He scored against Liverpool in the past. He got two assists against City the year before. He's got assists against Tottenham at home 3 years in a row now. Like, okay, yeah, you can question his away performances, but to say he doesn't do it against big teams for me is outrageous. So, not last season, the year before that, he got a goal and an assist against Man United. I can't remember if he played against Man United in the league last year. We won 2-0. I can't remember if he played. But it's like, I don't understand how this view is coming from Arsenal fans, when you purely just look at numbers to know that he turned up. Like,
I think you're right. I think a lot of the criticism towards Mesut Ozil is driven by, a few factors. I'm just going to touch upon a couple of them. And I think that the biggest factor, and maybe people are going to give me shit for this, is social media. I think a lot of people have expressed an opinion about Mesut Ozil, whether you're a verified account who has a lot of following, in the manner of a journalist, or if you are a regular Arsenal fan, someone like me, for example. A lot of people have expressed an opinion about how he doesn't turn up, and it's sort of caught on. And maybe because there was a game here or there where he didn't turn up, and it was a big game, it could be a Champions League game, or it could have been a semi-final or something where he didn't turn up. Of the FA Cup, for example. So once they've expressed that opinion, then they sort of double down on that. And there's a thing called confirmation bias, which is, just a pandemic in football fans and more so in Arsenal fans. And at that point, you're just seeking instances where, Mesut Ozil misplaces a pass or he doesn't make a defensive play. And people just get, just latch on to that. So I think you're absolutely right. And there's this... whole saga of moaning going on about at Arsenal. So whenever, we just discussed a 5-0 win and we still picked out on some critical bits from here and there. So I think that that's just a thing in football and Mesut Ozil for who he is, for not running around, as our friend Vish said, like a headless chicken, is something that, English pundits and experts, with all due respect, somehow they don't give him credit for the stuff he does. I mean, Tony said that his numbers in terms of ground covered, distance covered, is up there with someone like Aaron Ramsey. Yeah. Aaron Ramsey is always running. So I think people get stuck on watching the ball and not watching Mesut Ozil. I think Pep Guardiola once said that if you watch football, you will not understand Mesut Ozil, but if you watch Mesut Ozil, you will understand football, which I think is a great encapsulation of who Mesut Ozil is and what he brings to the table. I think there's no denying that he is probably the best number 10 in the world, and I understand that this might be coming from a biased source, but I mean, I really don't see any more arguments for an out and out number 10. I see very few arguments for against someone like Mesut Ozil. What do you think, Savvy?
Yeah, I totally agree with all you have said, and I think most of the criticism of Ozil is driven by the fact that the people don't like his body language. And I have to tell them that it's just his style of play. It is the way he plays. If you look at the game clearly, I think he runs a lot. Even yesterday, he ran a lot. He was tracking back and recently has been tracking back a lot because I'm presuming he's reading many social media posts. So that's why he started running a lot, and he's defensively been very good. I think against Spurs, he was brilliant defensively. Even yesterday, he tracked back players. And I think he's a player, when we don't do well, he's easy to pick, easy to criticize, because he's only good when he has the ball. He won't do anything off the ball. He won't press the players as we like other players to do. But when we don't have the ball and when we get beaten up by a team or anything, then Ozil is an easy target for anyone, even for pundits. And I think Tony said that earlier, because of the player Mesut Ozil is, how big his following is and how big a player he is. He's a World Cup winner and all that. And everybody knows he's a very famous player all around the world. So definitely when a pundit criticizes Mesut Ozil, then only it's going to make a headline. Otherwise, it won't make into the papers or it won't get many clicks. If someone is slating Iwobi, it won't matter much to anyone. Even Arsenal fans won't give a shit to that. But if you are slating Ozil, so definitely people will get onto that and will start slating him, which is very easy to do. So it's all down to these factors.
I think Savvy makes a few good points there as well. We all know that the Arsenal army on social media, particularly on Twitter, is down with the cause whenever it comes, down to brass tacks. And we've been almost there are times when we've dominated polls, and even if it's a simple tap in, that person has gotten the. We still do. But Sky, I think, has now stopped doing polls on Twitter because they realize that Arsenal fans are dominating that. But to all our listeners out there, let us know what you think about this. I mean, this is a very interesting debate which goes beyond a specific game. As Tony mentioned, Mesut Ozil has been performing over the past few seasons at times, and he's still been slated for his performances in the quote-unquote big games and for quote-unquote going missing. So to all our followers out there and listeners out there, please engage with us and let us know what you think about this, or the whole Mesut Ozil debacle, if you will, where people often criticize him for the games where he doesn't perform, or seemingly doesn't perform, but then again, he comes up with 10 minutes of absolute magic, albeit against a team like Huddersfield, who are not a bad team, guys. So let us know what you think, and we'll be happy to speak with you about that. Moving on to our next question, again, from a listener who sent in a question for our previous podcast, but I think it makes for good listening, is from Laka Lamar 10. Again, that's at Laka underscore Lamar 10. So we know who he thinks should be coming to our club. Tony, he asks, any news on Arsenal signing a sporting director? Keep in mind, he said sporting director and not head of football relations.
I was thinking about this the other day because, a lot of people have noticed that the name, he's not director of football or sporting director. Head of football something?
Relations.
Head of football relations. And it actually makes a lot of sense. The reason people were called directors of is because they were the link between the board and the business side of the board and obviously the football pitch. So because they tended to take a seat on the board, they were given the title of director. But don't direct anything. Like they, in terms of in a company setup, sorry. So they do direct, obviously, but in terms of a company setup, they're not a director of the company. So I think the name they've actually given it, well, it may be to save face because Wenger said, I don't want a director of football, but people are saying, oh, they've called him that, so it doesn't look like Wenger's not getting his own way. Wenger had no say in what this guy's title was. But it does actually make sense. He is the head of football. Like the head of the football development or operations. So that's what he is. And for me, it makes sense. Yes, it is. It's funny that they've gone around it that way. But it is what it is. That job title is what he does. He is the head of football operations.
So I think that's a good point you make. In terms of specifics for Mr. Raul Sanlehi, and apologies if we've butchered that name, but we will just refer to him as Raul for the podcast. But can you walk us through what is known about Mr. Sanlehi and his previous accomplishments, Tony?
I like how you just said we'll just refer to him as Raul and then instantly said his surname.
Yeah, I just like saying Sanlehi. I think it rolls up the tongue really well.
Whether it's right or not, say it.
It doesn't matter.
So he's known to have very good links to South America, which is a market that has been very largely untapped by Arsenal. We've had a few, but never anyone that was sort of unknown. We signed Gilberto, who's been our best one off the back of a World Cup. So again, it wasn't like the scouting network was there beforehand. He had an excellent World Cup and we signed him off the back of that. So he has very good connections there. Obviously, it was him that got the Neymar deal done. He got the Suarez deal done. You don't really need South American connections for that. One argument that a lot of people have said is he had money, which does bring up a point in itself. He might have very good contacts in South America, but had he not offered whatever it was they paid for Neymar, I don't think them contacts would have made a blind bit of difference. By all accounts, he has very good links with he gets on well with everyone, other sporting directors, which it seems like it's probably unimportant, but it's not. If you go into negotiations and you like the guy you're negotiating with, there's a bit of leeway, or you'll at least go to the negotiations. Like when we tried to sign Suarez, which is a podcast in itself, they didn't even want to come and sit down at the table with us. Whereas if we was liked, you may get to the table, and then once you're at the table, you can find out what the fee is and whether you're willing to go to that. By the way, this is a metaphorical table. But yeah, he seems to be well liked. He has very strong connections, as I said, in South America and obviously in Europe. So it does give you a little advantage. But it's the same as I said with Mr. Diamond Eye, that the club have to back him. There's no point having the people that are the best at their jobs, the best at finding talent, the best at getting deals over the line, if you're giving them a budget of a championship club. It just doesn't make sense. So it isn't. Look, again, people keep saying, "Oh, I'm negative." I'm not. I'm a realist. It is a good appointment if we give him the tools to be a good appointment. It's not a good appointment if we say, your links are amazing, here's £1 million, go and buy us someone, because you're going to get £1 million player. That's what you're going to get.
I think you make a couple of good points there. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about, a few people have sort of lost the meaning of these two appointments, and they're all but speculating on why these appointments have been made. And that has sort of driven away the idea of these appointments. I mean, we don't know for certain whether, you know, this is the club preparing for life after Wenger, or whether they're just trying to evolve and you know, trying to get ahead with the time. But in terms of what they will bring short term to the team, what do you think is going to be of utmost importance and of you know, their prime goal in the short running?
Well, it's very interesting that Raul's contract doesn't start till February the 1st for no apparent reason. So, I mean, it indicates that whatever happens in January has got nothing to do with him. And in a way, the negative mind, like the negative person in me, says that does that mean we're going to have a quiet January and they don't want to put his name to it, so it doesn't want to look like he started off on a bad foot. I don't know. So short term, it's difficult. I mean, a lot of people, and I mentioned this when we were talking about the scout, Sven, last week, that a lot of people are saying, oh, it's going to change all of our targets now and whatnot. I'd be amazed. I don't think it is. He will have a list of players that he's obviously been and watched and that he may recommend that would suit our model. And we could go for them players, but it doesn't change our targets. Wenger's not going to want a player and then suddenly not want them just because Sven hasn't had the chance to scout them yet, because we all know Wenger is very thorough and very extensive in what he does. So they may, as I said, short term, seemingly you can count Raul out because he doesn't start to work for us till February the 1st. And Sven might bring a player's name that Wenger hasn't previously considered. He may not. We'll never know is the truth. So short term could be next to nothing until the summer.
Savvy. Tony made a couple of points there where he mentioned the criticism that has already come up about this appointment, and specifically that's about the money, that Neymar and Luis Suarez both were expensive acquisitions, to say the least. Yeah. Considering that we brought in a scout who has diamond eyes and the connections that Raul reportedly has with South America, do you think we are now sort of looking at that market as a football club and understanding that we have really lagged behind in our hunting of talent there?
Yeah, actually, I think we are looking at that and we are addressing that. I think Gazidis came out and said, and we had a talk about that, he wanted Arsene Wenger gone in the summer when he renewed. So obviously, we are preparing for life after Wenger. But yeah, definitely we have been lacking. We consider ourselves a very big club, and if we compare ourselves to other big clubs like Manchester United or even Barcelona or Real Madrid, I think the way they work is very different to the way we work. So definitely we needed these connections and better scouts, because recently we haven't scouted player which has turned out to be a very good player. Recently, that hasn't happened, and recently all our signings, especially the unknown signings, the stars signings have been good, but the unknown signings were the players like I would say Lenny or Gabriel, who's gone now, hasn't worked out recently. So definitely we are looking to address that. We have been lacking behind, but I think it's a good appointment to make at this time, because Obviously, a few contract situations at the club, we don't know what's going to happen with that. And we definitely will need a good replacement for them in the summer, maximum in the summer. We might need those replacements in the January too. But definitely we need those replacements in summer. So I think these two are very good appointments. And we can expect a lot from them. But definitely the board, the club, the owner, whoever it is, has to back them. Otherwise, there is no use of appointing them, appointing such big names. Because if you're not going to give them money, then we are not going to sign anyone. And probably we will be lacking still. So definitely it has to work from both the ways. So we'll see how it goes.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, there's already criticism floating around, which is something we should have expected. But I think something that we haven't touched upon yet is the fact that Raul was at Barcelona for a very long time. And for anyone who knows the workings of Barcelona, yeah, it is not an easy club to be at. Not just because of the expectations, but because of the culture of Barcelona, of FC Barcelona. It can get a little heated and it can get a little confrontational at times. So to work under three or four presidents, I'm not sure exactly how many it was, but it just shows that anyone who has come in and taken the reins has always understood the importance of someone like Raul at the club. So just that in itself, I think, is a big testament to us going and getting him and then successfully acquiring him. I think he brings something new to the club. Till the time we see him in action and see what he is going to be bringing to the club, I think it's unfair to be critical of him. But I think there is definitely an evolution, whether it's for life after Wenger or, you know, just evolution in general is difficult for me to say. But it's moving forward. You know, we've seen two good appointments, something that we've been yearning for almost in the last few years. And the club is finally moving forward and trying to modernize itself. And we should chime in with that and be optimistic about where things go. Of course, if things don't go well, then we will be the first ones to you know, criticize and look for creative solutions. But I think it's a positive move, very much so in our favor. And I am very, very excited to see where things go from here. Any final comments on this, Tony?
No, I think I pretty much covered off.
Brilliant. All right, I think that wraps up our podcast for today. We've gone over over most things, I would imagine, and we are about an hour and 20 minutes into this. So unless you guys have anything final to say, I will wrap up everything.
Just to say to anyone listening, we're recording on Sunday after the United game. So if you have any questions, obviously we will put out a tweet before, but obviously not everyone's on Twitter or they don't see that tweet. So if you've got any questions for after Sunday, just send them our way.
Savvy, anything you want to add on to that?
Yeah, that's all. That's all.
Brilliant. Thank you for listening, guys, and thank you for downloading. Keep engaging with us. Keep sending us your comments, your feedback. We like to hear from everyone, whether they think we are biased or not. And keep it real. Keep it interesting. And thank you, Tony. Thank you, Savvy. And we will see you guys on Sunday. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye. Thank you.